Thank you very much for the presentation. Good afternoon to everybody. Thanks for this opportunity. I'm claiming that the measurement postulates are redundant. And my plan is to just go straight to presenting the result, and later we can discuss what are its consequences. So let's start by the postulates of quantum theory. We all know this, so to every, let me just repeat them. To every physical system, there corresponds a Hilbert space. The pure states of this system are the rays on that Hilbert space. The transformations or dynamics are elements of the unitary group. The measurements, we could say that could be one way of phrasing this, that for every outcome of every measurement, there exists an Hermitian matrix with eigenvalues between 0 and 1, and this is the corresponding probability when we prepare the pure state psi. We call these POVM elements, right? I mean, there are other ways of presenting the measurement postulate. You could say that measurements are Hermitian operators, and later you would present the Born rule for calculating probabilities. And this is why I call postulates, because sometimes it's more than one. Later on, I'm going to talk about the projection postulate, but let's not mention it for the time being. Also, we know that when we consider composite systems, the Hilbert space of the composite system is just the tensor product of the Hilbert space of system A and the Hilbert space of system B. Also, I want to say that I'm going to just consider Hilbert spaces with finite dimension. Good, so for the time being, let us forget composite systems. So let's talk for a while about single systems, okay? Now, we keep these things as they are in quantum theory, okay? So this is exactly the same as it is. And we are going to consider other possibilities here. Okay, first of all, how we mathematically characterize an alternative to this postulate. Okay, well, it will be the following thing. It will be for every Hilbert space, or equivalently for every dimension, we will have a set of outcome probability functions. This is just one function that for every pure state, for every ray, it will give us a probability, and it will be the probability of the outcome. So we in the same that in standard quantum theory, we associate outcomes to POVM elements. Here, we can associate outcomes to these functions, okay? So that's my alternative measurement postulate, whatever it is. It can be all of them. So for every Hilbert space, for every D, we will have a set of outcome probability functions. So if we take one of these outcome probability functions, this is just a map from the rays on the Hilbert space to the reals between 0 and 1, because it's a probability. And for the time being, let us assume that this map is continuous. Yes?
You're allowing all such functions? You're not saying that an outcome is associated with an effect in Hilbert space? Like,
yeah.
You're just allowing any function for now?
Any set of functions. So you could have a set that only allows So every alternative measurement postulate would be a set of functions that are the ones that I allow.
Okay.
Okay.
So the postulate would be something like the set is this set.
Exactly. Exactly. And different sets would be different alternatives to the measurement postulate. Okay.
And Luis, what's the meaning of continuous? Continuous in what then?
Well, this is a topological space. Now, we can define an action of the unitary group, okay? An action on these functions, okay? And this action is just composition with the unitary. So F is a map from here to here, and the unitary is a map from here to here, so it's just very clear. It's just before applying F, apply this unitary. Yes, please.
Can we go back one slide, please?
Yes.
Any functions Not
yes.
necessarily any functions that have anything to do with any experiment, though.
Yeah. Well, that could be one choice, for instance.
Well, but there's no evidence that those functions have anything to do with experiment, whereas the other one does.
Yes.
So why should we play this game?
Okay, this game is... So what we are doing is to analyze the logical relationships between these postulates. So here you can put the traditional set of rules.
But the other postulate doesn't necessarily have any meaning.
So I'm talking about abstract theories of nature, if you want. Not necessarily those that describe...
You're not talking about abstract theories of nature. You're just talking about abstract theories. There's no nature yet.
Okay. You're right. I'm talking about abstract theories. Yes. So for instance, at the end, my point will be that these postulates imply this one.
Okay.
So then if you want to write if you're interested in writing all the principles of nature in the smallest piece of sheet, okay, so you maybe not need to include this one because you can derive this from the other postulates. Okay. This is the type of thing that...
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so again...
Sorry, Tim.
Yes.
So here where you say measurements, you're really defining this set of effects, right? You haven't specified
outcomes,
what measurements are.
Yeah, so a measurement will be a family of outcomes, okay, that of course adapt to one for all states. But you could have this structure here, but we don't need this structure, it turns out. But yeah, in principle, a theory could tell us which sets of effects correspond to different outcomes of the same measurement. Okay. For instance, in quantum theory, this structure is not necessary. Okay. You can just always complement a POEM element. Okay.
Are you therefore going to assume as a postulate something that's like no restriction, namely, if you can find me a set of effects whose probability is sum to one, then we're going to allow that to be a valid measurement, a physically realizable measurement?
No. I'm saying that the theory could have extra ingredients, namely which sets of outcomes constitute one measurement, but we are not using this structure.
But if ultimately you want to get back to the quantum statement,
yes.
Which is that
yeah.
POVM is what's associated with the measurement, don't you need to introduce that structure at some point?
No, because the set of POVMs is such that you only need to talk about POVM elements. Of course, they have to adapt to the identity, but it's not that, apart from adding to the identity, there are no restriction of which POVM elements you can put together in the same measurement.
But how are you going to derive that, the fact that the effects have to add to identity?
That's just probability theory. That will just the outcomes of one measurement. I'm assuming that the outcomes of a measurement give probabilities, and those satisfy the axioms of probability theory.
But what I'm worried about is that I could have a derivation which doesn't get me quite to quantum theory. What it does is it says the effects of this theory are exactly the quantum effects.
Yes.
But unlike quantum theory, wherein every combination of effects that sums to identity is a physically realizable measurement, not just a logically
yes.
possible measurement, but physically realizable. My theory says that some of those logically possible measurements are not physically realizable.
Okay.
And so to get me all the way to quantum theory, I need to say something like every logically possible measurement is physically
yes.
possible.
So this will we arrive. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. It's just that for all the reasoning, we only need the structure, the mathematical structure of outcomes instead of the mathematical structure of measurements. Okay. But yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is one example of outcome probability function. So to every effect of every measurement, there will be for every outcome of every measurement, there will be associated one of these functions. Okay. We define an action of the group in the set of functions in the following way. Okay, so composition. So this means that before applying this function, we just transform this this pure state with the unitary u to the minus one. Okay. Now, just by the rules of composition of functions, this action is linear on f. Okay, so so f plus g composed with u minus 1 is f composed with u minus 1 plus g composed with u minus 1, okay? So it's a linear action. Of course, maybe you are concerned because this is not a vector space, but we can also consider the real span of the real vector span spanned by these functions. Okay, so this is of course what we mean by linear. And it's the same that, for instance, the quantum analog, you could have POVM elements, and you could also consider the space, the real vector space that they span, which is the set, the space of Hermitian matrices. So here we do something similar. Because each of those is continuous, it means that this action of the unitary group on the space of functions is also continuous and linear. Okay, well, linear, it's just because it's a composition. Okay, so what happens with a group action that it is linear and continuous? Then if this action is irreducible, it has necessarily to be finite dimensional, okay? And if it's not reducible, it will be the sum, the direct sum of irreducible representations of SUD. Okay, so this could be, so this V is actually the real span of this, okay? It's the vector space generated by this set of functions, okay? And we have there is a linear representation of SUD acting here. This might be finite dimensional or might be infinite dimensional, but it's always a direct sum of finite dimensional irreducible representations. Now, because of the structure of how we have built this up, one can show that there are no repeated representations. Okay, we don't gain anything by just repeating the same one. You can write the same functions by putting all of them in the same subspace. Okay, so all this sum over irreducible representations, it just have no more than once every irreducible representation that appears. Okay, and these are the, so one way of parametrizing irreducible representations is with the Young diagrams.
Okay. You write S lambda C D.
So this is the irreducible representation of S U D with Young diagram lambda.
Okay.
Some people write it. Okay. And also we have, as you know very well, as a structure of the unitary group, it happens that for every ray in the Hilbert space, we can define the set of unitaries that leave this ray invariant. Okay, some people call this the stabilizer subgroup, and it is isomorphic to this. Okay. Because we have this, then it must happen. This is just follows from this. But also, if you translate this, another way to interpret this equation is that this unitary acts on F, that's what means composition, right? And this new F, F prime, has to be, when applied to psi, has to be equal to F on psi, okay? So when we impose this into the action of this, the group SUD on the space of functions, outcome probability functions, we have that the only allowed lambdas that satisfy this constraint are a particular family. It's not relevant what it is now. So this Young diagrams corresponds to dimension 3, okay? Because it's the simplest non-trivial case, because for SU2 everything is, I mean, all many reps turn out to be equivalent to each other. So we have this family. This is the standard quantum representation. So the quantum action of the group is what people call the adjoint action, which corresponds to this frame, which corresponds, if you prefer to think in terms of weight diagrams, is this one, the quantum action. The next one is this one. And we have this family, which are hexagons with increasing size. Okay. That's not very relevant, actually. It's just that from all possible irreducible representations, we just have a very simple family that turns out to be a nice generalization of the quantum action of the group. Of course, our representation doesn't need to be reducible. So in general, an alternative to the measurement postulate would be pick some of those, maybe infinitely many of them. Okay, just choose some subset of these or all of these if you want, and then you have this your alternative measurement postulate. Okay. So what this is essentially we have characterized all alternatives to the measurement postulates for single systems. Okay, and this is. This is Thomas, my student, and I'm just saying this because he already came to Perimeter Institute to present these results. And yeah, once you have these, you can study those and consider the properties. You can play with these toy theories. Maybe that's a good name for these things, just like toy theories. And yeah, you can see that, for instance, non-orthogonal states are perfectly distinguishable, and you can have lots of exotic phenomena, like, for instance, a two-dimensional Hilbert space with three perfectly distinguishable states. And yeah, I mean, that's not surprising because we are changing the rules of how we distinguish things, what are measurements, and which probabilities they give us, okay? Okay, so, but now it comes, we come back to composite systems. Okay, so we have characterized all possible alternatives to those for single systems. And now what happens when we consider composite systems? So now it's not enough with this structure. Okay, so before I claim that we can specify an alternative to the measurement postulate by saying for every Hilbert space, which is the set of functions that correspond to of outcome probability functions, okay? Now we need more structure. What is this additional structure? Is this. So, for instance, suppose that we have a system with Hilbert space dimension A and a system with Hilbert space dimension B. So each one, so suppose we are given these sets, we are given our alternative measurement postulate for single systems, so we have this set. And we also have the set for the Hilbert space with dimension A times B. Okay? But now, what we need is a notion of what is a product effect, or how pairs of effects, one from here and one from here, are embedded in this space. Okay? And this is what we call the star product. Okay? So how, So once we know the set of these effects, so how pairs of these effects corresponding to doing a measurement on Alice and a measurement on Bob, how this is mathematically represented in the join system, okay? Now, because we need some consistency constraints for this is what we call the star product. For instance, when a product effect is applied to a product state, it has to give us product probabilities. You may say, well, why this is the case? Because if there were correlations, that would mean that from this, by measuring this system, I can prepare an ensemble of states in the other system. Okay, and that is the same as saying that there is a mixture of an ensemble of states here that gives me the statistics of psi. Okay, but we said that psi is actually a pure state, so that would be impossible. Okay. So, because psi is pure state and we are not changing the structure of pure states of quantum theory, it means that these probabilities have to be product, okay? That's what we mean with this star product. So, in the space of outcome probability functions, there is always one measurement that is outcome, the outcome zero with probability one, whatever is the initial state, okay? So the outcome probability function for this outcome is just the unit outcome probability function, which is for every state psi, just give me one, okay? Probability one, you always have this. And of course, if fi is a family of outcome probability functions that correspond to all the outcomes of a single measurement, what we have is that the sum over all outcomes here has to be equal to the unit effect. So this is the normalization of probabilities.
Are you assuming it's a unique unit effect?
Yes.
So you have this causality assumption?
Yes. I define the unit effects to be the measurement that has one outcome.
Okay, so in this sense.
But there could be different measurements that make give rise to different unit effects.
So if I define the unit effect as the effect that gives me.
If I take two different measurements and I ignore which outcome I have, then effectively I have only one outcome. They're different measurements. So they may correspond to different. This is the Pavia kind of causal assumption that they assume there's a unique deterministic effect or a unique. And that's equivalent to assuming that future choices don't influence past
probabilities.
So this is an assumption that's here.
And because we have this, let me first talk about. Once I have a set of outcome probability functions, I can always mix different, for instance, two outcomes and get another outcome. Okay, it has a convex structure because assuming that. And an agent can always mix measurements. So this mixing step has to be independent, has to give me the same predictions whether I consider the system A as a single subsystem or I consider system A as part of a composite system AB. This means that mixing has to commute with the star product, okay? Which amounts to say that this star product is bilinear, okay? And now if I apply the definition of the unit effect or the interpretation of the unit effect as the sum over all outcomes of a single measurement and this bilinearity, we have this, okay? If I have a measurement, this is like having, if I have a product measurement and I sum all the outcomes, if I have a product measurement, that's also a measurement for the composite system. So if I add all the outcomes of one side and all the outcomes of the other side, I just am adding all the outcomes of the composite system, okay? So these are, consistency constraints. Now, before going to this not very nice expression, let me say that I define the set of outcome probability functions as to include all the outcomes that are allowed within a particular theory. So when I say this includes measurements that I can do with an ancillary system. Okay, so then suppose that I have here my system A and my system B. If I prepare my ancillary system in a state and I make a joint measurement, okay, that's effectively a measurement on system A, but this measurement has to be also mathematically represented when I consider system A as a single subsystem. Okay. So it's not that by putting ancillas now suddenly I can make more measurements, okay? Because I already defined FA to consider all measurements, including those that I can do with an ancillary system of dimension 3, of dimension 4, or dimension any dimension, and 30 ancillary systems, whatever, okay? So then maybe this can be formalized in this way. For any outcome of the joint system AB, that I apply here with a fixed state on B, there is an outcome on system A that gives me the same statistics that corresponds to the same outcome. Okay. So these are just consistency constraints. And maybe now the most important
Luis?
Yes.
That doesn't look like a constraint on the star product. Like the star product doesn't appear anywhere in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. Yes, it's not a constraint on this product. It's a constraint on the family of sets of outcome probability functions.
So it would be fair to say it's like MathCal, how MathCal FAB relates to FA and FB.
Yeah.
It's kind of a constraint on
Yeah, so yeah. So actually, yeah.
Sets.
Yeah, you're right. So before arriving to this, when we consider this, we also should consider those constraints on these sets. It's just that these constraints, I didn't present them before because they relate to composite systems.
And this is what we are doing now,
and not before, but yeah, you're right. So yeah, in a way, everything goes together, the star product and the set of the family of Fs, of sets of outcome probability functions, all comes together as the structure of our alternative to the measurement postulate. Okay. And now, the maybe most important consistency constraint, which is that, considering a system or considering subsystems, or considering that one system as a part of a bigger system, those are all subjective choices that should not change the outcomes of the theory. Okay, so maybe when I consider tripartite product effects, it should not make a difference whether at some point I consider the system A and system B as a single subsystem, okay, or B, C. So this translates as the star product being associative. Okay. Okay, so these are the consistency constraints jointly of the star product and the family of outcome probability functions. Okay. Now let us see what are the only possibilities that are compatible with all these constraints. And yeah, so let me just explain briefly the tricks in the proof. So we have the representation of the tripartite system with dimension A times B times C. Okay, here we have an action of the group SU A times B times C. And now I restrict to the subgroup this one, SU A on one side, I separate system A and system B C on the other hand. Then whatever was this representation, it decomposes. Okay, this is what people call branching rules, but whatever it is, we have this. But what happens is that when we consider simple systems, we set which ones of those are allowed and which not, okay? And here in this decomposition, there appear some young diagrams that are not allowed, that don't correspond to the dynamical structure of quantum, are not compatible with the dynamical structure of quantum mechanics, okay? But this is not a problem. We just separate them. So these lambda and mu are those in the family that I set, those that are compatible with the dynamical structure of quantum theory, and I put them here, those that are not. And when we implement the star product, and we see all possible, we can classify all possible star products, those are going to be mapped here, and those are going to be mapped here, but not here, because these are not, this is something, maybe I have to remind you that because the star product is bilinear, we can make use of Schur's lemma, okay? And all EREPs, so this can only be mapped into the same EREPs here, okay? We cannot, since those are not here, there cannot be a map here that will be, that will commute with the group action, okay? Yeah, so.
What is B, A, B, C again?
Yeah, so this is like, the space of effects of the tripartite system. Okay. Well I make like the real span of the set of outcome probability functions. Okay. If you want, this is dual to the set of the linear span of mixed states. Okay. And now, one can just construct a contradiction by using the fact that this is invariant under this subgroup, because this is just the unit effect on BC. So the unit effect, as we wrote there, is constant for all psi, so it's the trivial representation of the unitary group. And that now just, so this limits how I embed this here. And now if I swap parties and put F here, it just turns out that this has support in the forbidden subspace. Okay. Always, unless you are, well, in the quantum case. Okay. So we, for all non-quantum cases, we get this contradiction. And yeah, we are characterizing all possible star products. I mean, this is just, we're not putting constraints apart from the consistency constraints that I mentioned before. Okay. So yeah, if you want, we can write the theorem. For every finite dimension, give me a set of outcome probability functions and give me a star product that embeds pairs of effects in the composite effect space, satisfying these consistency constraints. Okay, and the only solution for this set of constraints is the familiar family of outcome probability functions that can be written in this, where these are P of EM element. And maybe now, answering to your question, also compatible with this theorem, you could have restrictions of this. Okay, you could forbid some of the Fs, or forbid some of the combinations of the Fs. But this is also in quantum theory, it's not true that you can make all measurements. Okay, some will provide uncomputable functions. This is known. I mean, yeah, this is just an idealization when you forget certain things. Okay.
Can you go back? What was the proof again?
Yes.
Go back one. Yeah. What is the meaning of that? Is it restricted to S?
Yeah. So this is the set of effects of tripartite effects, and of three systems: one with dimension A, one with dimension B, and one with dimension C. Okay, and the action of the quantum dynamics is SU A times B times C. Okay, and now I restrict the action.
So you're assuming that the dynamical evolutions are given by unitary.
Yeah. So let me say I am I could say what the exercise that we are doing here is to consider quantum theory, all the ingredients of quantum theory, but except for the measurement postulates, that we are letting them to be arbitrary. A measurement postulate is then given just by, for every Hilbert space, a family of outcome probability functions that give me an outcome as a function of the state, okay? So we are allowing this to be arbitrary, and we also need a rule. In order to have a complete alternative to the measurement postulate, we also need to see how it works with composition. Okay, so how we embed pairs of effects into the joint effect space. Okay, that has to satisfy some consistency constraints. So we've taken quantum theory, we remove the measurement postulates, we substitute, but whatever it is that plays its own function but can have an arbitrary mathematical structure, okay? And we arrive at a contradiction whenever they are not the quantum effects with a quantum star product.
But part of what you assumed is that there's a well-defined notion of time and evolution between definite times.
Yeah, so here I'm...
Something like this.
Yes, yes.
That evolution should be given by a unitary.
Yeah.
Or I suppose you could propose it to a CP.
Yeah, well, we are here assuming that we is unitary. Yeah. Yes?
Why are there cross product terms that are illicit part?
Why?
Are there cross product terms? Why aren't there terms which are illicit in CA but illicit in CBC?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, there could be pairs where one is illicit and the other is not illicit, but all those go here.
Okay.
Here, by the I just group things, and the definition is that in this part of the sum, both are illicit.
And that doesn't affect the contradiction. If you wind up, what happens if you wind up with an illicit, with on an illicit part of the illicit subspace when you do this operation?
It happens that when you do this, when you construct the conflicting situation, it has support on an illicit. Even though this may be illicit.
Can you give a simple example of an illicit?
So we define an action of the group, unitary group, to the set of outcome probability functions. This is this action. And we arrive at the conclusion that when we take this space as a sum of irreducible representations, all in order to be consistent with this action, so this is not any action, okay, on the space, it's just one type of action, it has to be this vector space can be finite dimensional, infinite dimensional, but it always has to be, for instance, if these three, it will be this any of these irreps or a sum of these irreps. Okay, this is the quantum adjoint representation for SU3. And these are others, but they are not all, okay? In terms of weight diagrams, they are these ones. So these are the licit ones, okay? Other representations, yeah, they are fine representations of the unitary group, but they do not correspond to something that acts like this, okay? Okay.
Were those Young diagrams saying you could have no more than three rows? Is that if you're in three? Was that effectively what's going on?
Well,
is there something more special?
That's true. It's more. So that's sorry. It's true that. All irreps of SU3, when you express it in terms of a Young diagram, they can never have more than three rows. Okay? That's always the case. But this is not. I mean, you know how this series goes. You just put one more here and one more here, and this clearly is not all the Young frames. It's just one family. Or in terms of weight diagrams, these are all hexagons. And you can have different regular hexagons, and you could have irregular hexagons or triangles or. Okay, so it's just a very particular subfamily of, it's kind of a generalization of the adjoint representation. Okay, if you want, I can tell you what are these representations, if you're interested. Okay, so this is the adjoint representation acting by U and U dagger. And now just take N, okay, this is N1, N2, N3, okay? And this is not irreducible, this is reducible. So now, of course, you will act by putting U tensor 2 and U tensor, sorry, N dagger, okay? That's one action. And this action is reducible, and if you decompose it, it has all these ones, okay? So for instance, if you're interested in the largest one, you could just take the largest one. Or projecting any subspace. Okay, so you see that it has some sort of flavor of quantum mechanics. In particular, is a projective representation because quantum mechanics is not about elements of the Hilbert space, but about rays. Okay, so that's one I haven't mentioned, but that would be another constraint that actually you don't need to impose. But those are about rays because the phase cancels. So not all representations of the unitary group could give me a theory that would be everything as in quantum theory except for the measurement postulates. Okay, they would have different dynamics as well. Okay, they would have a different stabilizer subgroup. Okay. So yeah, so now I, let me go to where I was. I suppose it's clear my point. So yeah, I mean, some of these theories, you could cook them up to be quite, to give as close as you want predictions of quantum theory, okay? You could have like a, so in actually they are not, some of them will not be even in contradiction with experiments, okay? Because you could take construct effects that are as close as you want to the quantum ones, okay? But with some differences. Okay, so this is the idea here. So yeah, so now let us see, so we can perhaps claim this, that in some sense the measurement postulates of quantum theory are redundant in the sense that I explained. Now, maybe you could have a concern because we have assumed some things. We have assumed associativity. We have assumed these consistency properties of the whole framework. And maybe you could say, OK, maybe you have not proved that one postulate is redundant, but you have just substituted one postulate by other postulates. OK. Yes? First of all, let me say that these consistency constraints are much, much weaker. So just as a mathematical case, I mean, they only imply the measurement postulates in the context of assuming the rest of the structure of quantum theory, okay? But not by any means as the, on their own. And the other thing, and that is what I like most, is that we are kind of separating different categories of physical principles, okay? Something that is, it is very nice of quantum information science is that we can consider quantum theory as a generalization of classical probability theory and independently of any other physics. And this is useful to generate, to write quantum algorithms because yeah, you don't want to care whether they will be implemented with atoms or with photons, okay? It's just, separating different types of objects. One thing is the theory that will tell us how we represent states, how we represent measurements, and the other theory is what is going to be the symmetries, the dynamics, the Hilbert spaces. Maybe Rafael will disagree with me at this point, but that's one way of thinking about physics. But one can do a step further, okay? For instance, if we are talking about these theories of how we just forget physics and just talk about how we represent states, how we represent measurements. Some people call those general probabilistic theories. And you can still have some axioms for what is a general probabilistic theory.
Okay.
And then it includes what is a physical system, what is a subsystem, should it be associative, the composition of subsystems. So this is just defining what is a general probabilistic theory. Okay. And a different set of physical principles could specify which general probabilistic theory you are talking about. Okay? And in quantum theory, at least in the standard postulates, you have a mixture of those, of these different sets of ideas. And for instance, when people do reconstructions of quantum theory, usually they don't care about this. These are like background assumptions, okay? Specification. For instance, perhaps a nice way to formalize this is what maybe is done with category theory, okay? Just formalizing what is a probabilistic, general probabilistic theory. And later on top of this, you can specify a particular one with physical principles, okay? So this is maybe what we are doing here. Yes, we take this, we still need to explain what is a physical system, what is a subsystem, how this works with dynamics, okay? Its dynamics and probabilities are independent of how we arrange a system in subsystems. But this is still not the same as specifying what are the actual structure of states, measurements, and all this. Okay? So this is what we've done. And the idea is that if we assume this, we keep this, then it seems that the measurement postulate in the context of the other postulates of quantum theory is redundant.
Okay.
So this is maybe the point. Something that I assume is that outcome probability functions are continuous. That's assuming something, okay. However, first of all, let me say that if you're not assuming this, you're just considering a Hilbert space as a set of points, okay? There is no notion of whom is next to each other, so you would be quite radical. But if you want, you can still relax this continuity assumption and instead take a more operational one, which is saying that when I have a Hilbert space with finite dimension, I have to be able to specify a mixed state with a finite number of parameters. Okay? Because the number of parameters that I need to specify a mixed state is a dimension of the state space of effects, okay? Which is dual to the set of mixed states. I haven't talked here what is the set of mixed states, because it's really not necessary, but if you are changing the measurement structure, you are going to also change the equivalence relation between ensembles, okay? So ensembles that are equivalent in quantum theory may not be equivalent here because you're changing the type of measurements that you are doing, and hence you are going to change the structure of mixed states, no longer density matrices, okay? It's elements of this. Okay, so if we impose that this is finite dimensional, that because otherwise, if to specify a mixed state of a qubit, I need infinitely many parameters, I will never be able to do that in finite time, okay? So if you're more happy with this more operational dimension, then finite dimensionality already implies continuity. Okay. Finite dimensional representations are always continuous. So this is just a comment. And yeah, I haven't said anything about the projection postulate. I mean, it's not even clear what is the projection postulate in this more generalized framework with you talk about POVMs and these things. But in any case, if you still like it, yes, so that's not something that is seems to be redundant, okay?
Have you tried to prove the projection postulate from this?
No. I think it's not going to be redundant. It's just a different type of logical content.
Because if the projection postulate weren't true, then subsequent measurements would not be constrained?
Yeah, I mean, we should define what is the measurement postulate, because first of all, probably it only makes sense for projective measurements. And in certain operational frameworks, it's even not true, because you could, if you're allowed to just compose measurements with operations, you could just compose a measurement with a conditional unitary that makes it not true. Okay, so yeah.
There's a broader class of changes to wave function, but suddenly you can't have extract information and still keep the same state. So so even in that broader class, some things have to be true.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, the post-measurement state should always be a complete generalized, whatever is the notion of complete positivity, but a complete positivity, positive dynamics in this theory, okay? I haven't classified those or anything like this, but yeah, it should be a physical map, even if the projection postulate is not true.
Right.
Okay.
Is the projection postulate some replacement for it, an important part of the theory?
I'm leaving this open, okay? But at the end, is not useful, it's not important, this question, because the only alternative to the measurement postulate is the standard, there is no alternative, okay? The only consistent one is a standard measurement postulate, so you may be happy continuing with your projection postulate.
Isn't it used in designing quantum computers, doesn't it have a practical?
Not really. You could do everything without the measurement postulate.
Well, I mean, you could, but
I think it's so. If you think about post-measurement states, you could actually build maps with outcomes that violate the measurement postulate. But yeah, I think the measurement postulate is about a continuity thing when you have a notion of saying you have a notion of what is immediately after of a measurement or something like this. If you don't have a notion, you just have circuit type things where time is not a parameter, it's not going to be relevant in measurement postulate. It's not going to be true. You should have a continuous time thing.
Okay. How do we make prediction? Well, something strange because.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you are thinking about some sort of continuous time.
I'm just thinking you need some update rule. You can't look at the world and learn anything, basically.
You can look at the outcome.
Right, but then you need...
But look, you could have a measurement that just after the measurement does a conditional unitary.
Okay.
This is clearly going to, and you consider this as a single measurement, okay? You cannot look inside and see this conditional unitary. It's clear that this is going to violate the projection constraint. So it depends on, you should be able to look inside and have a notion of what is immediately after of the measurement and separate the measurement from the conditional unitary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that the projection constant is the right or the only one. It just seems to me you need something. Otherwise, you don't.
Yeah, well, definitely you need that.
The only situation in which you can make predictions is where you prepare something in advance and do a one-shot measurement, observation at the end.
Definitely you will have to say that whatever it is, it's a generalized operation. Okay, that's for sure. In any theory, quantum or whatever. So that's for sure, yeah. And yes, just as a final comment, in some different sense, there is a long tradition of derivations of the measurement postulates within the relative state interpretation of quantum theory, also following a decision theoretic approach in many worlds. Also within the coherence program. There are criticisms on this work, and also, but something that it's really the case that when you go to this derivation, you have a long list of complicated assumptions, okay? Even more than this, this is just some of them, that this is for the decision theoretic approach, this is for the coherence approach, and yeah, there is a long list of complicated assumptions, and in our work is more clean cut what we are doing, although of course it's not really comparable, because for instance many worlds, it's not just about deriving the Born rule, you just also want to explain what means probabilities in the many world scenario, okay, so it's not really the same. But still, maybe this theorem that I presented, maybe it still has some application in many worlds. And yeah, we are looking into it. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
I'm really afraid to ask, but the proof that you arrive at the contradiction, I really miss where you started assuming something that is invalid so that you get a contradiction in the end. Like, you have these probability set that actually still include the Born rule.
Yes. Well, I get a contradiction when I assume that it is not the Born rule. So in a way, maybe I should not write contradiction. I should have written that these consistency constraints implies that the set of outcome probability function are those of quantum theory and nothing else. And maybe restrictions of those, okay, but nothing else.
Is the detail somewhere else? I find it from your paper. But...
No, this is not in my paper.
Okay.
This is, as he said, this is very new research. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is, the notes are written, I can send them to you.
I'll ask for more detail later offline. Yeah, because I really feel that I do not follow the proof.
Well, I didn't explain enough to follow the proof, so I'm not expecting anyone to follow the proof. It's just explaining the tools that are involved and the type of reasoning.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Have you assumed the linearity for these outcome probability functions? So if I tell you f prime is sum over k fk, and I ask, what's f prime on psi? Have you assumed that it's sum over k fk acting on psi?
OK, so you have arbitrary functions. You are telling that one of these functions is a sum of other two functions, then clearly but this is just what you are saying, right? I'm not making any hypothesis. So is this what you're saying? That you have a function that it is the sum of two functions?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, clearly, if this is the function, then the probability will be the sum of probabilities. But this, you're already saying it, right? So the functions don't need to be, for instance, maybe something that you could ask is, the functions need to be linear in this, as in quantum theory? No. Okay, the answer is no. In some sense, one of the results is that the functions, for at least for the finite dimensional case, the functions are linear in something like this for a sufficiently large n. And this is only in the finite dimensional case, which is not, I'm not assuming finite dimensions.
Okay. I was asking because one of the pre-existing works that you didn't mention, which I would consider sort of the gold standard for deriving measurement postulates, is results in the sphere of Gleason's theorem.
In what?
Gleason's theorem.
Yes.
Okay, so I would say the modern perspective is that Gleason's theorem has been superseded by Lucien's proof that in the generalized probabilistic theory context, you can show that the rule for calculating probabilities is a linear rule in some vectors that represent your states and some vectors that represent your...
Yeah, well, definitely that's always the case. You can always have a representation of states and a representation of measurements
right. That
is linear. And this is, in my notation, this is the V. In this space of X and the dual of, that's the matrix, things are linear. So probabilities are linear functions of the density matrix. Okay, so that is, for any theory, maybe what another way of saying Lucien's result is that in any theory, there is a representation where probabilities are linear in the mixed states.
Okay. So if you're granting that, then it seems to me, as soon as you tell me either what the states look like, that they're quantum, or you tell me that the measurements are quantum, I get the other being quantum for free.
No.
So that's the form of the original Gleason's theorem is, roughly speaking, if you grant that effects are represented by projectors,
yeah,
or in slightly generalized versions by quantum effects,
yeah,
then it follows that the most general kind of state is a density operator.
Yeah.
Okay. There's also a kind of reverse version of Gleason's theorem.
Yeah.
If you grant that I can do density operators,
yes,
then the measurements have to be represented by positive
Agreed.
Operators like
yes.
an identity.
Okay, but here we are not assuming any of those things.
But I think you're assuming much more than that. So you were assuming that the states, the pure states, were the quantum state, like
yes.
The psi, the vector,
yeah,
the projective Hilbert space. So suppose I started there and I said, now, what are all the states on a system A? And we call them rho A. If you go back to your list of assumptions about the star product, the one that didn't involve the star product, right, so if I did a version of that for states, and I said, look, if you give me a state on AB, psi AB, and I operate with it using the unit effect on B, I get a valid state on A, call it rho A. So it'd be a for all psi AB, there exists a rho A such that blah, blah, blah. As soon as you give me that.
Yeah, but I cannot give you that. First, this rule is only for product states. Second,
this is a different rule because it refers to the measurements rather than the states. I'm just saying, take the analog of that rule for states.
Yeah, but that's what we don't have.
True, but what I'm saying is that
we also not even have it for measurements. But
sure.
Because I'm leaving these things
right.
as open, arbitrary.
Fine, but compare the list of assumptions you need for this alternative derivation of the structure of measurements. So I just say I assume what you've assumed regarding the pure states. I make this one extra assumption, which is analogous to that one, but for states. And I'm done. I've got the
No, because so first, if you so we have psi, okay. If you give me the states at rho, sorry. If you just talk about psi AB,
yeah,
and we don't talk about measurements, we don't even have a notion of partial trace. What is the partial trace of this? You have to tell me the structure of measurements.
You've got a UB.
Right? A UB.
I'm assuming that there are these deterministic effects.
Yes.
How do I define the partial trace? I say, consider just operating.
Yeah, but then you have both the structure of states and the structure of measurements. So if I know, if I know the structure of measurements, so if I know all these for a particular case, indeed, I apply with UB and I will get the reduced density matrix. But you need the structure of measurements.
Okay, so I agree, it's not totally clear to me how much of this list I need to get where I want, but let's suppose that I needed all of it. Okay?
Yes.
It still seems to me that nowhere in the version of that I just described do I need to say anything about transformations. Like, so that whole business about the unitaries or SUD, et cetera, it's all gone.
Yes.
I just tell you, look, it's projective Hilbert space together with a bunch of postulates, and then there's an analog of that second last line, which is in terms of states, and I've got the structure of measurements. So isn't that a simpler derivation because it hasn't had to appeal to the nature of...
No, because you're already saying... so in a way, you're giving me the structure of mixed states?
Well, I'm granting that you're giving the structure of pure states, and then I'm deriving the structure of mixed states using a notion of partial trace that's implicit in allowing deterministic effects.
Yeah, but no. So one thing is allowing deterministic effects and saying the theory will have a deterministic effect, but you're saying,
yes,
give me the deterministic effect of one theory.
Sorry?
So
I'm imagining that you have a UA, a UB,
yeah,
a UAB, and I'm saying that the way to find rho A is,
yes,
to combine psi AB with UB.
So for instance, you would need, so you have a UB.
Yeah.
You compose it with something. Let's leave this open.
Okay.
Some people put a point.
Sure.
Okay, and then it acts on a
CAB.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, this implicitly assumes that you know the set of those, okay? Otherwise, how it is even defined, the star product?
Well, I assume that there's some set, just like you've done, and I'm trying to figure out what that is.
But depending on which is the set, you will have different structures of... For instance, here you could consider n equal to 1, n equal to 2, n equal to 3, and get the reduced density matrix, and you would get different things.
So does Gleason even invoke composition?
Gleason's
theorem invoke composition?
Well, what I'm doing is I'm taking Gleason's theorem.
Yeah.
And okay, suppose I'd said to you, well, I prefer, let's call it the reverse Gleason theorem, where we start with the structure of density operators, and we just immediately derive that the measurements must be represented by positive effects.
Yes.
Now, you might say, Rob, I don't like the fact that you start with the structure of density operators because it's got this convex structure, and I haven't assumed that. I've only assumed something about the pure states. And so I'm trying to get it closer to your derivation.
Yeah, but I think it's misleading to say I'm only assuming pure states. I think that once you say I'm only assuming one effect, which is a unit effect, and the star product?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I'm doing like you. I'm saying there's some set of effects, and we want a set of postulates that tells us that that set of effects is exactly the quantum set.
Yes.
Now, what you have allowed that the size are the quantum ones, right? They're not some
other,
the quantum size.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm saying if you define all the rho A's in terms of the full set of quantum size on AB, you get exactly the quantum rho A's.
Sorry, can you repeat the last sentence?
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking that if you ask what kinds of reduced operator or reduced states on A do you get by postulating that the states on AB are the pure quantum ones, you're going to get that the rho A's are just the quantum density operators. And then once I'm there, I can get the structure of the measurements.
But I think that I think that these, so you only need this thing, right?
Right.
I think that this is already assuming that. What is this?
The structure of the quantum measurements is the quantum measurements? You think I've assumed that already?
Ah, so you mean...
yeah, there is some set of measurements. At the end of my proof, I'm going to try to say...
No, but this is not going to be the quantum. For instance, if you don't include three systems, and you have a problem with associativity, I can give you counterexamples to what you're doing. I could give you theories that satisfy everything, and the partial trace will give you a mixed state that it is not a quantum mixed state. And the measurements will be different. For instance, this, like this. That's only, like, let's consider A, B. So this is, there is a notion of partial trace here that is perfectly consistent because it's only when you have three systems that you have problems with associativity, but with two systems, that's going to be fine. And here we'll have a different theory with a different set of measurements. For instance, a qubit will have three perfectly distinguishable states, just two, okay. And the density matrices, the mixed states will not be density matrices.
Gleason's theorem, I'm not really following, but Gleason's theorem requires dimension three at least. So, I mean, will that counterexample go through when you have three dimensions?
Yeah, well, he was talking about a more modern version of Gleason's theorem where you assume all POVMs, and this also works for two. So I actually agree. If you give it's trivial once you have the set of density matrices to have the set of allowed effects will give you positive probabilities, and the other way around. Okay. But I don't think if you're just talking about pure states, I don't think that.
You get the structure of density.
Yeah, if I give you the pure states, you don't even know what is a partial trace. And I could give you different examples that will give you different things. Partial trace only appears when you have a notion of local measurements. And
which you do. Mm-hmm. Here, I think we let you grant all this. We have a notion of local measurement.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd like to hear more later maybe about this. Exactly.
Okay.
But I guess my more general worry is, have you assumed so much here that perhaps I could leverage all of this into a proof that the states on A have to be the density operators? And if so, would you agree that if I could do all that, then I wouldn't have ever needed to say that the transformations are SVD? Because as soon as I got that the states are represented by density operators, I would immediately get through a kind of reverse Gleason theorem that the measurement.
Yes, sure.
Okay.
So is talking about the measurements and talking about the mixed states is the same thing. It's not, but yeah, but what are the mixed states? The mixed states is exactly the same as the structure of measurements, okay? So there is no difference. One is the dual of the other, but it's straightforward translation. So, but what are the mixed states? So give me any convex, for instance, imagine that the pure states are a circle, okay? These are my set of pure states. Now, the set of mixed states can be two-dimensional, but I could put this as the stripe of a tennis ball and be three-dimensional, and this would be a different set of mixed states, and the pure states would be still the same. Or I can have any dimensionality of mixed states that I want, but still the set of pure states being a circle, okay? A deformed circle embedded in a higher, okay? So if you don't assume additional structure, you don't see that. Just assuming the manifold of pure states, you can embed these in ways that will change the dimensionality and will change the structure of mixed states.
Do you find it objective? Maybe I'll ask you later, give other people a
chance. I'm trying to think of an example where this sort of thing isn't true. So I'm not sure this works, but if you take the deployed bone model, and you know the work of Valentini? Okay. So in that case, you have a wave function. Usually it's done for position, so that the space is not finite dimensional, but I don't think that's relevant to what I'm saying. And then you supplement that by a hidden variable, which in that case is the actual position of the particle. And then there's a way of deducing the velocity of that particle depends on the wave function.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's called the sometimes the pilot wave. Okay.
Yeah.
So one thing you can do in that model is you can take your distribution of particle positions to be different from psi squared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you assume that they are equal to psi squared, then the dynamics is such that that will remain true.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take it to be different from psi squared, In which case, your probability function is not given by the Born rule. So then this thing wouldn't be true. So I'm wondering how that contradicts the sort of assumptions you've put in. It might just be that the addition of hidden variables goes outside. So
yeah.
It's described by psi and also hidden variables.
Yah, the ontic pure stage would not be psi, right?
Ontic stage would be psi plus, you know,
okay.
The Cartesian product of psi
yes.
and some additional variables.
Yes.
But I don't see where, you know, where that's... where that's coming into your assumptions. Where
yeah, I don't know. I don't know they are very different frameworks.
There's a notion of product system at all in that.
Well, and yeah, you can have two particles and then you have a product system.
Wouldn't it contradict this insofar as f wouldn't just be a function of psi, but also of those?
Oh, is that okay? So f is supposed to be a function of psi and no other variables. Is that the contradiction there?
Maybe. I mean, strictly speaking, the pure states in that theory should also include the position of the particle, because that's the maximal information.
So pure states are given an operational definition in your approach, or how are they given?
Yeah, here is an operational definition.
Okay. So they're the extreme
points of the.
Okay, so maybe that's right. Okay.
Just a question that actually I got a bit confused when you were answering to Rob. So basically your starting point is that you have basically the states and the dynamics of quantum and somehow you recover the measurement postulates. But for the way that you were replying, basically it feels to me that you're assuming no restriction all the time. That's the logic of your argument holds if you don't want to assume such a thing.
So
you have like a theory that has the same states and dynamics as quantum theory, but it has some restrictions on that.
Yeah, actually, I mentioned that. I said the only thing that is compatible with the premises is this, and also possible restrictions on this. So you could forbid some effects, or you could forbid.
So basically, what you're saying here is that you have that the rule that psi probability is Born's rule.
Yeah.
On top of that, you can restrict some of the effects. What I'm wondering is that if you restrict the effects to begin with, could you allow for other rules that are not Born rules, but there are other types of probability assignments?
No. Yeah, so this is, yeah, but you could say that the Born rule with restricted effect is not the Born rule.
Okay.
But the group will act in the same way. I'm misunderstanding you. I don't need to assume that all Fs have to be allowed.
I mean, I understand that you say here basically you have a function that assigns probability, which is in the form of Born's rules, and then you can say, well, some of the effects, I apply some restriction, and then I don't allow some of the effects, and that would be, for instance, a theory that satisfies that doesn't satisfy no restriction. But now I wonder if you, like, somehow don't assume no restriction to begin with, somehow. If you could allow for other types of other forms of f that is not just a Born's rule, you know, the trace of a density operator times a positive semi-definite matrix.
On the slide where you define the contradiction, did you need the full set of quantum effects to get to the contradiction? If you did, then what Belen is saying is.
No. Here, actually, the contradiction is assuming that, actually, in the non-quantum case. So the contradiction happens when this is not quantum. This is not the Born rule.
Okay.
But does the contradiction assume that this?
The no-restriction hypothesis, no.
Okay.
No, these sets of outcome probability functions don't need to be any vector in the vector space that give me probabilities between 0 and 1. Doesn't need to be all of those.
Okay.
So don't assume.
Of course, you have an action of the unitary group. So taking one effect, you will generate all those from the unitary group, okay? But these are not by any means all possible effects.
Okay.
So you could have, if you want, theories with restriction, but also consistency with the dynamics of the group. They have to absorb the dynamics and generate other effects.
So a related question, is this implicitly assuming that any unitary evolution is implementable?
Yeah, I'm assuming that, yes.
So it's not just the particular Hamiltonian of the standard model or
yes.
whatever. You have to be as,
yes.
assuming you could mock up any.
Yeah, so.
Set of systems you
yeah, so these. Yeah, so this, maybe what we call quantum mechanics is something that is useful in some regime of physics. Maybe if you want to think in the universe as a whole, it's not useful because, you know, the dynamics is constant and you don't have, and also the state is just a particular state that evolves. It's not that you have state that you can prepare and you can mix. And so yeah, as I said, it's definitely useful for quantum information science and for thinking in many types of, definitely for thinking in terms of ion traps or things like this. Whether useful in some setups as the one you're mentioning, that I don't know. You know, people will have opinions and
So I had another question. I also had a hard time really grasping the proof. This is the essence of the whole
yes.
talk. So let me try a baby version of it. I'm sure it's too much of a baby, but can it grow up into the proof? Which is, basically you're assuming that the definition of these effects or whatever should be unitarily invariant or something. There's some sort of notion of invariance under unitary.
What is invariant is the set of effects, not the effects.
There's some sort of invariance going on.
So I'm just assuming that if I compose a measurement with a transformation, that I call it a new measurement.
Right.
Operationally.
I'm not trying to be too precise, but all I want to get to is that the only thing that an arbitrary unitary transformation preserves about a vector is its norm. So you might jump from that and say, well, in the end, the probability has to be a function only of the norm. Is that the seed of this proof, or it has nothing?
No. It's not very relevant that here. Yeah. So the probability is a scalar, if you want, is a scalar product between effects and states. But the norm is constant for all pure states. The norm often is it could be a measure of purity, the norm. If you
yes.
want. But
the scalar product.
The scalar product, yes.
But the scalar product is another thing that's preserved by unitary
evolution. Yeah.
So if you have two things there, so you might say the only thing it preserves is the scalar product, so the probability should depend on the scalar.
Yeah, but the scalar product in which representation? Because we are not talking about the scalar product in the Hilbert space here. In which representation? So the thing is that the Hilbert space, the action of the unitary group is the natural one, okay? In the quantum mixed state, the action of the unitary group is the adjoint, okay? U and U dagger.
Yeah.
Now, here we are allowing different things. So you will have, a scalar product, but in which space of mixed states and with which group action? All these are different, in principle, alternative measurement postulates, at least if you consider only two subsystems. You still, if you don't consider the problem with associativity, with three systems, you can have for two systems pretty nice consistent theories, okay? That is actually published.
So I have two questions. The first one, this set of illicit irreps that you have here, are they exactly the projective representations?
The what?
The projective representations. Are the projective irreps which are illicit?
I think so. I'm not entirely sure.
You only assume that the rays are preserved.
Maybe that's true. So we didn't construct the proof in this way, but I think that this is true.
Okay, and the other one is about this associativity that you mentioned just now.
Sorry?
The associativity that you assume seems to be very central to the proof, right?
Yes.
So,
if not for this, we can build alternatives to the measurement postulate.
Yeah, and the question is, like, has this proof made you, like, question, like, how natural that assumption is, or do you still think it's, like, very obvious that this should
be? Yeah, so this is, for me, this is, at least from an operational perspective, it's just a subjective choice. Mm-hmm. I have three systems. Now, I can choose to consider these two systems as a single system. Okay? Or these two systems as a single system with respect to that one. Okay? These are subjective choices. At least, I mean, you could understand, you could think differently than that. You could think that no, actually, ontologically, there are some fundamental states, okay? Fundamental subsystems of the universe. Okay? And you cannot actually, at a fundamental level, choose any other thing, okay? But at least from an epistemic point of view, let's say, if a theory is just a tool to make predictions, you can always take how you partition a big system into subsystems, and this is subjective. It should not change probabilities. If this effect is different than this effect, it will give different probabilities, at least with some states.
Last question. So, I think my misunderstanding has to do with the distinction between saying that the pure states are in the projective Hilbert space versus telling me that I can represent, you know, the states as actual project, you know, as the projector. So if you told me, okay, that the set of states in my GPT, the pure ones, correspond to the projector in two-dimensional vector space.
Yes.
Then I could say, well, of course, I could always do a convex mixture of those guys.
No. To do a convex mixture of those guys, you need to know. So one thing is, I agree with you. You can represent pure states in this way. But now, probabilities are linear in this object or no? You're only allowed to do mixtures in the representation which is linear in outcome probabilities. Mm-hmm. Maybe the probabilities are not linear on that. Maybe probabilities are linear on that. OK? So you cannot do mixtures of, for instance, you could not do mixtures of anything. I mean, that's a different object that you do this. And mixtures of one thing is different than mixtures of another. In one case, you will be able to distinguish ensembles that you cannot distinguish in another case. For instance, if you do this, in a qubit, the equal mixture of up and down is different than the equal mixture of left and right. You put these two. Okay, so the set of mixed states changes completely. And still you could say that you represent it by the projector. It's just that the function that will give me the probabilities is quadratic in the projector.
That's kind of what you're doing here. Okay. So
for instance.
Okay. If there are more questions, let's thank you once again.
Thank you very much.